Hey everybody, welcome back to Daily Buddy Pick. Today's topics of conversation is going to basically be things I'm binge watching during quarantine. Because, you know, everybody's super stressed out right now about all the crap that's happening in the world. Stressed out about school, stressed out about jobs, stressed out about health, stressed out about their family. I mean, the list literally goes on. So I thought to myself, I did this assignment because I'm a teacher. And so I did this assignment with my students, and we're always focusing on trying to find activities that are engaging for kids. Like, what is something that I'm going to like totally get them to actually want to do as an assignment? And they always also talk about, like, especially when I was in the credential program, is talking mainly about engagement. How do you get students more engaged in certain things? And so I thought to myself, you know what? I'm going to do a positivity activity, because when people are going through stressful times, you're always kind of trying to help other people through, like your friends and your family. And they're always putting on this shiny, happy face of like, stay positive, hang in there. Like imagining basically the whole example of the kitten hanging from the rope. Like, imagine, like, this is going to be super exciting. This is basically what we're really focusing on, is to stay positive. But what does positive mean for everybody else? So we did this assignment to where they had to create a visual image of what positivity means to them, or like something that they're thinking of doing or something that they've done to create positive environment for themselves, their family, and their loved ones. And it was probably one of the most engaging lessons that I had throughout the whole thing. And I keep thinking to myself, you know what? Positivity is a big thing. And especially now in quarantine, that's important to people. So I thought, what are the aspects in my life other than my family, which is very obvious, of course, because my family is amazing, but what makes me happy? And I thought to myself, you know what makes me happy is binge watching stuff on TV. So that's going to be the topic of conversation tonight for my very first podcast, is going to be binge watching in quarantine. Dun dun dun, insert music here. So what am I binge watching on quarantine? Basically everything. So when you're a teacher, you come to find out that you basically have a lot of time sucking activities. So grading, like family, like that's not really time suck, but you know what I mean? You find yourself with a lack of opportunities to binge watch the shows before you actually had a full-time big girl job and you were single, or you and your boyfriend or husband had just gotten together, didn't have kids, your stuff changes. And then all of a sudden you get this big girl job and you realize, oh my God, I cannot watch my shows anymore. You realize, holy crud, dude, I'm seriously like 4 seasons behind on Grey's Anatomy, or like, where did the time go? You didn't even know. Then you get into shows that you totally absolutely loved, like Deadwood. Talk about a freaking letdown. Deadwood. So we got into the show Deadwood. Absolutely freaking loved it. Was like, oh my gosh, this show is amazing. So we watch it. I want to say there was like 4 seasons of it. And we get into the show. And finally, the last, very last episode of the last season in the series airs. We watch it. Didn't even realize we were post a year after this thing was out. We watched the show. And I was like, oh my gosh, honey, we have got to throw on like the next episode. It's basically the episode of Portlandia. Oh, they start binge watching Battlestar Galactica, and then they realize that the season's over and they hunt down the makers trying to like get them to restart or like do one more episode. Basically that. So basically the show's over and I'm thinking to myself, I've got to hop online and find out when the next season's gonna start. Come to find out that not only was that the last episode, but this, we were a year behind the last season. The feeling of just like utter sadness about the fact that we could no longer watch this show. And I had no idea that I had committed this time to watch this show, to come to find out that the show is absolutely no more. And that's it. Like, the betrayal that I felt. So now I do a little bit more research before I start getting invested in a show. Like, the first show that I watched basically over quarantine was Ozark. Everybody ranted and raved about Jason Bateman's portrayal in Ozark. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I think he directed and produced and, like, wrote the show. I was like, I love him. He's a great guy. Like, he's a great actor. I'm totally going to support him. I'm going to watch the show. And so I watched the show. And it just sucks you in immediately. Just sucks you into the show. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm hooked. So I binge watched it. And then you get done with the first season and you think to yourself, like, please, please, Lord, anybody out there, please tell me there's a season two. And then you click on that little season icon where it gives you the drop down on Netflix. Boom, season two. And I'm like, yes, I'm going to watch season two. Watch all of season two. And then that dread comes and you're like, oh, damn, that sucks. Now, those of you that don't know about the show Ozark, let me get you a little recap. So Jason Bateman's character basically plays a money launderer. His family, he has two kids and a wife. Laura Linney, I think, is her name. Oh, I can't remember her last name. I'm terrible at this. Basically, his wife has no idea. Finds out that somebody in part of their little trio, they work for this cartel basically in Mexico, and they're laundering money. And what ends up happening is that they find out that somebody in the network, I mean, 10 years of investing time and money into laundering somebody else's money, somebody's got to come along and fuck the whole thing up. So they come along. The boss comes over and goes, hey, who's taking my money? You come to find out his partner totally steps in the back. He's taking money. Sorry, there's ants in my... my God. So you get kind of like, oh my gosh, like in the face. Everything happens in the first episode so quickly that you can't keep up with it. It's paced so fast. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like what's going to happen? It starts out super slow and then it goes to like 1,000 in like a second. And you're like, whoa, this is like a really heavy show. And it's like a slightly off version of like Breaking Bad, like a darker cinematography. It's got lower lighting. It's a lot of gray blue filters. It's basically like a really dreary Seattle setting, but they're like not in Seattle. Anyways, so he convinces this guy, please spare my life, even though he killed his partner and his partner's like fiance or whatever, and like two other random dudes that he finds out that they're stealing money from. And they basically say, hey, you know what? Like, I got this opportunity in the Ozarks. Like, I can take your money and I can launder it there. So let me go to the Ozarks. And so the guy goes, yeah, you got to take your family and you got to pack up. You have 48 hours to pack your shit and move to the Ozark and start laundering $50 million or some crazy amount like that. 500. I think it was like 500 million. It was like outstandingly like high. And so basically the first season is just antics of him having a deadline and is trying to convince his family that it's best for them to go to the Ozark. And, like, basically, I don't know, launder money. It's, like, a crazy, like, edge of your seat, kind of, like, what else terrible can go wrong? And I think that's the crazy thing about the show is the fact that you have this sense of dread the entire time that you watch it. So the one thing about binge-watching TV shows that you'll come to find out is that some shows are not made to be watched back to back to back to back. Like, the way that people are watching shows now and binge-watching sessions, it gets so repetitive in the storyline that if the storyline is repetitive and you watch it a week apart, it's not really as noticeable. But if you watch it one after the other, it gets to be very, very grating. And that's the one thing I kind of was bummed out, especially in season two with that show, was the fact that they just really... really did a good job in the first season of pacing stuff out. And yes, like every episode was like one big thing after the other after the other, but it was written well enough that it could sustain that. But then going into the second season, it didn't really sustain it as like effectively. I would say that the one thing that saved the second season is the story arc that they gave the wife. She became this kind of passive person in the first season, just being forced to go along with her husband's ideals. And then you get into the second season, and then you come to find out she's got a little bit, she's got a pair on her. She's got some brass, you know. you find out in the first season, and it's like rarely talked about, is that she had a background in politics, and she had worked for the Obama. Gosh, ants are everywhere. She had worked in the Obama campaign. So you're thinking to yourself, like, okay, why is she so passive when she's going to have this career? But then you find out that she basically stopped her career dead in the tracks because of the fact that she wanted to have children. And so she goes in there, she has her kids, and then she kind of looks back with resentment. And I think maybe that's why her and Jason Bateman's character end up kind of separating, because of the fact that they basically fell out of love, and maybe the fact that she had some resentment towards her husband because she lost herself in her marriage. And so when she got into the second season, they kind of were like, hey, you're up shit's creek, you just gotta have to embrace the suck. And so she really leaned into it, like really leaned into it. She leans into it so far that her characters just go kind of off the rails, like off the rails. And so it kind of pulls you out of the scenario of like, and it makes it less redeemable because of the fact that she had basically had this moral compass in the first episode of being focused on saving her family and her kind of her relationship. You find out in the first season she had an affair, and oh my gosh, the ending of that affair was very graphic, but you just have to watch the show. It's amazing. And so after that affair, it's like they've kind of lost the trust. You know, in a relationship, if you lose the trust, it's very hard to gain back. And so she ends up getting sucked into this downstream flow going into season two. And then she just gets this like life out of nowhere. And she starts doing these crazy ass things. Like she ends up like basically being a part of like just like his character finally breaking down and having to kill somebody to save his wife. And then she ended up doing all these shady deals and doing all these like really inappropriate things, like blackmailing these congressmen or these people in or the government. And she just does this complete 180. And you just kind of initially want to be like, yeah, girl power, this is totally rocking out. But then you find out like it does not follow her character arc at all. Like, I can understand you leaning into the suck. I can get that. But why would you write your character so extreme in one season and then the next season being completely opposite? And Jason Bateman's character, you know, the father of the main character of the show, it's like, what's the point of her having this crazy-ass arc when his character does the complete opposite? But the whole first season is him basically doing everything in his power to save his family. And being willing to like kill himself, you know, I'm just gonna like go drive off cliff, kind of somewhere, and like get like insurance money that I will sacrifice myself for my family. And then all of a sudden you see her character do it, and it just seems so disingenuous. I don't know, it just really kind of pissed me off. And then the very end of that season, and they interact with a third party who comes into play, and it's basically these two basically kind of country people that were mass producing heroin and selling it on the lake that they had established in the second, kind of the second season more so than the first. And it's like, where did these characters come from? You've already got a clientele base that you've already terrified about, and now you've got this other thing. And it's like they took a bunch of spaghetti and they threw it at a wall and prayed that something would stick. It was just too many things in the second season. But the pacing of the show in the first season was awesome, but the second season it seemed to like trip up every once in a while. But maybe it was because of the fact that I binge watched it. Binge watching the first season of Ozark is easy to do, but second season tends to be a little bit grating because it repeats some things in the first season and then it repeats itself in the second season. But I do highly recommend that you watch it, especially if you like intense dramas and like crazy shit happening all the time. That is the show to watch. But another show that I watched during quarantine definitely had to be the Ricky Gervais show, Afterlife. Now, I had heard a lot of things about this show, and I follow Ricky Gervais on Facebook. He's amazing. He's a huge animal lover, a very big animal advocate. He's vegan. I mean, I am not vegan. I am an animal lover, but I am not that strong. But he had this show back about, I want to say 5 years ago. It was called Derek. And that's the show I watched that I absolutely fell in love with him. It is a very versatile show that shows his range as an actor. He is just phenomenal in it. Unfortunately, there wasn't very many seasons of it, which really made me sad because it was just getting to the height of its fame and popularity, and then it just stopped. And so when he came back out with this show called Afterlife, I was very hesitant to start it because I had been burned. I felt like I had been burned by getting emotionally attached to this character, and then they just ended it on a high note. And he had other stuff he was doing, and he had a lot of stuff going on, and I get why he did it when he did, but it still felt like kind of hurtful to the audience base. But it's a British show, so maybe they don't. No, I can't say that. Everybody loves Derek. What am I talking about? But yeah, so it's a British show. It's awesome. So he has this new show. It's called Afterlife. And of course, I get into it like a season behind, like every other show that's amazing. I mean, I was like 4 seasons behind on Breaking Bad before I got into that boy. Bad Boy. But the only reason why I did that was because Anthony Hopkins wrote Bryan Cranston this amazing love letter, basically saying it's the best acting he's ever seen and he absolutely loved it. And I thought to myself, well, if Sir Anthony Hopkins is basically saying the show is amazing, I have to watch the show. So I binged watched it forever, and then I couldn't get past the first episode of the last season. Like, maybe part of me was just a little like not prepared to let it go. Maybe that's why I haven't watched the last season of it. That and the fact that somebody spoiled the ending to me. Anyways, I don't know what's going on. Anyways, I'm getting off on a tangent here. Afterlife is basically Ricky Gervais's character is madly in love with his wife, who is also in the show, Derek. Anyways, it doesn't matter. He's madly in love with his wife, and his wife ends up dying of breast cancer, and it's basically the whole show is him trying to survive after her death. And he's a writer for a small newspaper where he actually ends up meeting some new people that got hired on. And it talks about his relationship with his boss, who is actually his brother-in-law. And so there's that dynamic. And the fact that he doesn't really have a lot of close friends, but yet he does. He just doesn't realize it. It's such a lovely show. But it gets very, very dark. It talks a lot about suicide. His character tries to kill himself like several times in the show. And he does this beautiful, beautiful job of showing these arcs of emotion. He can be basically the Ricky Gervais that you see in like the Oscars, or was it the Golden Globes? I'm terrible at this right now. When he hosts a very large award show, and how he can just, he's just quick-witted and he can just come right back with it. And then all of a sudden he can be this divisive, angry person because of the loss that he had for somebody that was so close and dear to him. And then he can have this emotional depth about feeling that loss and just like not being able to live. There's a lot of trigger warnings in it, which I think is very appreciated. It's like basically a disclaimer in the beginning. It talks like a trigger warning of this, this, this. And I was like, that's awesome. But it just breaks your heart. Like, I previously had, a family member go through breast cancer, and I just lost one of my best friends to breast cancer about a month and a half, 2 months. No, gosh, 4 months ago. It's been so long. So it kind of hit close to home for me. But yeah, it's just this beautiful, beautiful show about him coming to terms with the fact that he lost his wife. And not only that, but him actually seeing that he has people in his life that love him and would be upset and sad if he had left this world. And it's really sweet because he's always had, like in the shows that I've seen him do, he's always had this beautiful message of the bond between humans and animals. And in the show, he has a dog. It's a German Shepherd dog. And he just loves this dog so much that whenever he tries, I know this is really dark to laugh at, but whenever he tries to commit suicide, he ends up, the dog comes in. Like, there's a scene where it was kind of early in the season, in the first season, that he's sitting there in his bathtub and he's got this razor blade in his hand. And you're thinking to yourself, is he going to kill himself? And you know, in the back of your mind, there's two seasons out. There's no way he's going to kill himself right now. But the fact that the dog comes in and just sits there at the side of the bathtub and just stares at him. And so he's like, because the dog's hungry and wants to be fed, because he's always forgetting to buy the dog food because his wife always did it. And so he basically ends up, just kind of like berating the dog a little bit. But you could tell he's really kind of berating himself. But whenever he thinks about doing something crazy, his dog has this like sixth sense and comes in. And he talks about it with his therapist, and who is a sleaze and a half. I mean, this guy is like the worst therapist you could ever go to. And he ends up just having like these emotional breakthroughs, and it just really kind of like, oh my gosh, it's such a sweet and lovely show, but it has so much depth to it. It's really, really freaking good show. Like, really, really good. Really good show. I cannot recommend that show enough, but I think I might have a slight bias because of the fact that I really love Ricky Gervais as an actor, and I really love his work. And you have to really, and he advocates for human rights and animal rights, all the time. And he's such a lovely gentleman. I'm talking like I know the guy. I wish I did. I'm like, hey, dude, what's up? We'll hang out. But no. Let's see, what else have I watched recently? I've been trying to get in. I was thinking of doing Carnival, but something about Orlando Bloom just kind of turns me off. I'm like, I don't know if I can get into that show. But I mean, then there's Glow, which I haven't really binge watched lately because I'm still waiting for the damn new season to come out. But everybody's kind of quit production, so that's probably not going to be out for a while. But Ladies of Wrestling, that's a great storyline. You know, honestly, I really didn't care for Allison Brie's character in Community all that much. So when Glow came out, I was like, I don't really know if I'm going to like this. And so all of a sudden, like, it was a different side of her. But yet it was the same kind of dramatization, whatever it was called, of the show. And I was like, I don't know if I really like this, but I'm gonna give it a try. And it was freaking amazing. You have to watch that show. That show is like freaking amazing. So let's skip over from binge watching to the debate on whether or not we should be watching movies, new release movies at home. Yeah, it's contentious. So let's take in effect that Universal is being banned from AMC theaters because of the fact that they stated that they were going to be probably doing a hybrid version of releasing things at home and releasing things in the movie theater. Now, here's the thing. When I was talking to a friend about this particular subject matter, I kind of brought up the fact that I was like, hey, it doesn't seem very fair for people who have accessibility issues getting to an actual theater to watch a show. And I felt like they were losing out on the whole aspect of going to see this show. And this was before we were in lockdown quarantine. And so I wasn't really sure if they would ever have an option for those people who couldn't see the show. Like, do they just have to wait forever for the movie to come out on DVD or, you know, straight to streaming? And that's basically how I thought. If I'm wrong, people educate me, please. I would really like to know this, but I thought that's basically how it was. Like, everybody who couldn't get to the movie theater just kind of asked out. And so when everything went down on lockdown, I remember the first thing that we actually got when it came straight to demand was the new Trolls movie. I had actually bought it for my daughter because we were really excited to see it in the theater, and we were really bummed out that we couldn't see it. And the last couple times I've been going to the movie theater, and I go a lot, like a lot, like MoviePass addicted a lot. I've been noticing that the crowd sizes have been really dramatically kind of falling. And I thought to myself, well, maybe movie theaters are going the same way of like VHS went to DVD, and it's just being phased out because it's just something that isn't really accessible. I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you, like, I have a yearly Oscar list, and I do not go see all the Oscar list nominated movies in the theater. This year, I did get really close. I watched almost all of them, but I don't have the money to see everything. So if I have an accessibility issue, then I will find another way to get it. I'm not saying how, but there's a lot of stuff from October on that is very accessible via computers or friends or family or whatever. I'm not going to say. But the thing that made me like bummed out was like, there's all these accessibility issues for things like short dramas, short films, documentaries, things that you can't really see because there's limited releases, there's all these other things. So we come back to the old adage of like, which is going to be sustainable? So I got into this Facebook fight, argument, whatever you want to call it, about the fact that Trolls supposedly did so extremely well with early release going straight to streaming. And so I remember talking to this woman on a feed because it was like a mommy's group or whatever. And she ends up contacting me she did eventually, but she ended up putting on this Facebook feed, basically saying, hey, is it worth buying this movie and or renting this film out at home for $20? Because it is a little bit pricey. Or is it, you know, should have been something I should just wait to stream like months later when the price goes down to like $5 to rent it? And I said, well, think of it this way. The price of admission for a ticket, because you know the majority of time with that demographic of for a movie, you're going to be taking a small child. And it's going to roughly be, even before you get to food and drink, it's going to be about $20 to go in. So not only that, but you get this release and you get to watch this release for 48 hours. You get to actually watch this release for 48 hours. You can see this time, you can see this movie as many times as you want to in the privacy of your own home for 48 hours. Like, I'm sorry, if you wanted to go see it like 10 times in the span of 2 days, how much is that going to cost you to go see it in the movie theater? Like, and you can make your own snacks at home. You can, like, cost efficiency wise. And it's important because of the fact that these people need to recoup. The people that have worked on this film. I mean, I've worked on a film before, a very low budget film. But I'm like, these people work really, really hard in this industry to make things in demand for people to, like, see. Like, it's important to support that. And then all of a sudden, we have basically this pandemic and we can't go to the movies and support these things. We can't do that anymore the way we're used to. And then all of a sudden people started releasing things and streaming things like super early. And I thought to myself, well, that's cool. It's very convenient for me. I'm really, really digging this. This is great. So we get into this argument and she basically starts telling me, well, it's not the same. She got really mad. And basically told me I didn't know what I was talking about. And it wasn't the same. And it wasn't worth it. And yada yada. Like $20 is too high. And I said, what? You've got... It was just this mundane, stupid argument that just went around in circles. And finally I was like, you know what? We're just going to have to agree to disagree. But I mean, it's just the way things are going. People have home movie theaters in their home now. You just take a room, throw up some blackout curtains, put a projector up on there, you got a home theater. It's very similar to the experience they would be experiencing with the, I mean, but then you have this nostalgia that's created because my generation, I'm almost 40, my generation grew up with accessibility to movie theaters. But the thing is that we also lost this love of drive-in theaters. That used to be the rage for the generation before us. You know, and then they lost that to regular movie theaters. So it's like, I mean, the crazy thing is now it's coming back with a big boom because of the fact that everybody's on lockdown and quarantine. But I mean, like, It just seems to make sense to me. I'm super excited about stuff. It's a positivity thing. Like, I know on this date I have to look forward to because this is coming out and I'll get to watch it. I mean, it sucks that I have to pay $20 just to watch it as many times as I want in 2 days, but I mean, I'll still do it because that's how much I would pay to see it in a movie theater. And then when it comes out on DVD, I'm going to end up paying the same exact price twice. So what's the difference? It's the experience of the movie theater, and it just made me mad. Sorry, something just happened. It was really spooky. But yeah, I just got super mad about it, and I was like, well, I'm going to take my ball, and I'm going to go home. And so I basically just left. It was like a stupid thing to like be complaining about, but yeah, no, that's what happens. So it's like, do I really want to see if these things come out? Yes, yes, I do, because I love anything film and pop culture. I will watch it as many times as possible. So I'm going to wrap this up as my first podcast. I probably won't publish it because I've got to go back and edit, and I'm too lazy to do so. But thanks for listening to me talk. Bye!